Hello, hello. And this is the Sleon Productions podcast, where we interview authors, entrepreneurs, people that make an impact in their industries and also providing value. Many of you listen to this podcast to find out, how did that guy do it? How did he get to this part of his life? I want to be that person. I want to be successful. And today we have a special interview. I actually met him about a couple of weeks ago. There was this big conference in Atlanta headed by Louis Giglio, and he's involved with the Christian industry. Chris Estes. He is behind the scenes. He's worked with the big labels like Hillsong, Hegarty Music. But anyways, we'll have him and explain all the labels he's been with. Chris Estes, welcome to the Sleon Productions podcast.
Are you trying to label me, man? gosh, hey, it's good to be here. And it's fun to meet you. I love, actually love how we met through social media networks. Like, to me, like, that is the social aspect of the networks, right? It's like making connections, actually socializing, not just posting your favorite, thing. And it was interesting, you reached out and I was there, and I forget sometimes people, I'm just kind of in the day-to-day of my life, I'm around a lot of Christian artists. And when you asked me, like, how do you know all these people? I was like, I was taking it back. I was like, well, I work with them. Just kind of funny. But dude, I started looking at your podcast and we kept chatting, and dude, I'm honored to be here, be on the podcast with you.
Yeah.
So,
no, absolutely. And, just to tell a little bit of my background, why I'm so interested in the Christian music. I'm a Christian. I, grew up with Christian music all my life. And I was saying to Chris before we started this podcast, I've listened to Keith Green, Delirious, Don Moen. I was a Don Moen fan back in the day.
I got a Don Moen story.
Yeah. And of course, I'm Petra a little bit. And I also went to Liberty University, where I've got to know a few of the artists that are now popular. Meredith Andrews went through Liberty. And before her was DC Talk.
That's right.
Toby Mac, which I'm sure Chris knows. But before we head into like the fun stuff, Chris, tell us your background and how you got into Christian music.
Man, it's so my background, I'll share a little bit of my story, which is really a testimony to what God has planned for our lives. I think we're all, I don't know what your listenership is, if they if they're all Christians, but I do think you have to look at your life, your purpose, your mission, and know that there's a creator. There's a reason why we're all created, and there's a destiny and a plan for that. And for me, that pathway went through in music, and the origin stories of that was, as a young kid, I didn't grow up in a faith family. So I actually didn't know much about God, or certainly didn't know who Jesus was. Growing up in New Orleans, it was more of a cultural, kind of a faith in New Orleans, a lot of, Catholics, not speaking badly against them, but, they're, that it can be more cultural when you have a Catholic heavy type city where, it's, in New Orleans, there's the dark side of the voodoo stuff and all the, all that darkness. And then you had the Catholics who were, more reserved in their faith. They're not typically known as evangelistic, at least in New Orleans. So yeah, I just saw them as like pretty buildings and things that people did. I had a friend who always did the cross every time he passed a cathedral. And I thought that was kind of interesting, but I just really didn't know much about, but God was pursuing me, and where we intersected was music, literally. I kind of had a family that was a Jerry Springer show, that literally, violence, drugs, addiction, alcohol. So my escape was going to my room and listening to music. And that was just kind of the thing that brought me to another place. It's where I felt connection. And back in those days, I'm a little bit older. You can see some of the gray highlights in the face here. So I grew up like in the cassette era, in tape cassettes. So I would take cassettes, and I would queue up like 10, 15 songs. I had a tennis racket and literally a shoestring that I would make as a strap, and I would sit in front of my mirror to escape all the craziness of my family and just do concerts. I would sit there and just like play all the songs, and I would mimic what I was hearing and just have concerts to myself in the mirror. So that actually, and I was at, you know, probably eight, nine, and 10. And then at age 10, my parents had seen me do that for so long. They were like, okay, you need, we'll get you a guitar. So I had already learned a lot of rhythm in my right hand because I was mimicking like everything. So I had like that down. What I didn't realize when I got a guitar was there was six strings and stuff that had to happen on the left hand to actually make music. So that took me on a journey of just kind of learning chords. And again, it was, to me, music was that escape and that place where everything was good. And I could experience something that I enjoyed, I had passion for. Started going to concerts at a really young age. And in New Orleans, I remember there was one concert in particular, this old kind of glam band called Rat, kind of in the Motley Crue era of those bands coming up. And they were a big MTV music video band. And I wanted to go see them. They were opening up for another artist named Billy Squire. I was at the UNO Lakefront Arena. And when the lights went out, because I used to go to this arena, me and my buddies would go see wrestling there. And our trick was we'd take a bandana, we'd throw it over the rail, and then we'd jump over like we're getting the bandana. And if we didn't get caught, we'd get close to the wrestling, you know, the wrestling matches and all the old greats. So I went to the concert thinking I'm going to be able to get on the floor and go straight. Like, I'm going to do that whole thing. What I didn't realize was security super tight at those concerts. So the closest I could get was stage right, first riser up. I ran over there. Lights were down, and I remember seeing the guys in Rat walk out and kind of their silhouettes, and I was going, oh my gosh, these are the guys. And I saw people around them, and I was like, gosh, man, I want to either be that guy in the band or the guy with the band back there walking up to the stage. And that was, man, I was 11 years old, and I just remember like that so deeply marked me that I poured everything in my life towards that. And so the journey beyond that age was, you know, typical garage bands playing rock and roll, metal, grunge rock, the whole, you know, not anything Christian. The funny thing about Petra is literally, I thought my first experience of any kind of Christian music was Stryper and Petra because of some of the MTV videos that would come across with Stryper. And I was like, these guys are Christian. And I didn't understand it. I certainly didn't like know what that music was even about, but I had my favorites kind of in that genre. And I was like, these guys are nothing. Like I'd never listen to these guys. And in God's sense of humor and his destiny for my life, he would actually bring me back around to a place where I actually would. So fast forward through my teenage years, really knew that I wanted to either, you know, be the next big rock guitar player in the band or be working with the band. So in college, I studied marketing and had undergrad in English because I like to write. And I knew as a plan B, if I couldn't, and I was at this time, I was playing in bar bands and doing the whole kind of that whole scene, the college, Southeast College circuit. And I also started kind of managing other bands because I was coming out of college and other bands were like, hey, can you road manage us? Can you help us develop our marketing? And so I kind of fell into that as an indie, just working with bands that were, again, unknown independent bands in the Southeast College circuit. And for me, that was kind of that first step into it. And I realized I could make more money working for the bands and being in the band. So I kind of transitioned out of doing the bar band thing and, you know, really pursued that along with it, you know, given the family history and the background I had as I was coming up to age, I was deeply, you know, wounded in my heart from a lot of the traumatic trauma stuff of dysfunctional family. So I started filling that with, you know, with drugs and, to, you know, being in the rock and roll scene, that was kind of normal. So, and all the rock god heroes that I had, that was kind of their storyline too. So I was unfortunately a high functioning drug addict. And so I was able to do that, live the life, do the band thing for a couple years. And then that all ended really abruptly as the addiction just got bigger and bigger, and it got me to a place where I was suicidal because I had tried everything. I tried like AA programs, I tried astrology, mysticism, anything I could do to try to get off the drugs because I didn't like the roller coaster of that. And God met me in a really unique place. Ironically, it was on Christmas morning, 1996, and I was pretty strung out. And coming back, I got to my house in my apartment, and I knew that I was super late to doing the family Christmas morning stuff. And I just sat there with the phone and a gun, and I was like, either I'm going to kill myself or I'm going to pick up the phone and I'm going to call my family and tell them I'm at the end of the rope and I need a way out of this. And so, and again, I think the beautiful thing in all this is like God was pursuing me. Like I look back on it, I'm like, gosh, God was protecting me, pursuing me, had plans for me, and I didn't even know it. Like to me, being a Christian, what I saw was the born again Christian people were the people on the corners in the downtown areas that were preaching at people going into bars and very, very loudly and like turn or burn. Like to me, it was like it felt like a bunch of judgment, a lot of rules. And I was like, if that's being a Christian, like that's I never want to be that. So the beautiful thing in that whole storyline is that I think God knew I didn't truly know who he was, and he was pursuing me to bring me to a place where even in my darkest moment in the bottom of a pit, he literally would reach down and meet me there. So man, I made the call. I went to the family, and my uncle and my aunt had a direct mailing printing business, and they did work for a mission in West Mobile called the Mission of Hope. And my uncle was like, hey man, you've tried everything. You're at the end of your rope. You really need to go to this. You need a rehab. And he said, I think you need to try God and try to see him who for who he is, what he has for you, and just pray for God to reveal himself. So I went kind of begrudgingly because I felt like I was going to be preached to, and it was going to be a bunch of the judgment, the rules, all that stuff. And my uncle just said, hey, just listen to what you want to listen to, but pray that God reveals himself and read the Bible, and he'll speak to you. So that's what I did, man. It's been a sober New Year's Eve. I did that for a week, and God met me in a place that was it's really beautiful, man. It was in a cow field. I had nothing but a Bible, and kept bringing me back to John 1 through 1:14. And it's in the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And and as you read through those verses to the 14th verse, it talks about that becoming a light and coming to bring hope and to bring restoration. And it ends with the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and that was Jesus. And God just wrecked me with that. And I saw a picture of love and hope, and I just started to see how he was pursuing and intersecting, my life. So that's kind of a long answer to how I got into music and brought me to a place where I sat there not really understanding how the gospel works and how salvation really truly is the gift. I was kind of plea bargaining with God, saying, "Look, if I'm going to accept this salvation and be a Christian, then I got to be able to listen to good music. I can't listen to Petra and Stryper." Like I was thinking again in my head, I'm thinking rules, and I was like, "I really want to be able to listen to music that I love." And my wife, who we're about to celebrate 24 years, we were dating then, and I was like, "I don't think I can date as a Christian. I really want to marry her, so I need her to be my wife." And then I want to continue to work in the music. I want to be in music like I was, and I just felt God lovingly say, "Yeah, to all that." And over the course of years after I came out and I got plugged in the church, started playing music. At that time, it was 1998, so Delirious had kind of it had already peaked. So I'd missed a lot of the stuff that you grew up listening to, but I got to come back to it because as I got plugged in the church I was at was like, man, bring the guitar. I have a Gibson Explorer that was the only guitar I had at that point. And it looks straight out of like Metallica. It's like that white Metallica James Hetfield metal guitar. And my pastor was like, bring that guitar. I want you to play that guitar on Sunday. I was like, all right, I'm doing it. So I started learning, at that time we were playing a lot of the Hillsong, the earlier Hillsong stuff. And United was starting to was still kind of a youth band at that point. And the Lord took me on a 7-year journey of, here's the songs that are being played in church. And so I was playing them as a musician. And then I went into the print technology space because I couldn't do the band bar thing and the music thing downtown. And I didn't really know what Christian music was. So I thought, in God's answering to my prayer, like doing music was going to be church. I was like, that's great. So then I started on this career path with a local print company in Mobile called Zante. Over 7 years, God brought me on a journey to see his church around the world. Like literally, I would travel on the weekends. I would call my pastor. He'd be like, hey, go check out Saddleback, check out Willow Creek, check out Hillsong while you're in Australia. And I got to see this really beautiful picture of what God was doing around the world. And I thought I was on a career path that was going to continue to stay in print technology. I had moved my way up into running a whole marketing group and department. And I think God was really trying to take me on a journey of being a new believer and really fortifying my faith and my commitment to living out faith in life and in work. And what I didn't expect was 7 years later, I was running an ad in the paper from a marketing team that was about 25 at the time, 25 people. And I just happened to look in the local newspaper to see if it had run. This is way before LinkedIn, and this is like, this is early 2000s. So I looked in there, and there was an ad from Integrity Music that was looking for a digital marketing director. So it's 2005. The iPod had only been out for a year, and my worship pastor at our church was a song developer at Integrity Music, and he's like, "Man, you should apply for this job," and he just kept on me about doing it. And I actually was, because I wasn't looking for a job, really slow to do it. And he kept on me. I turned in my resume to him and got the interview. Still didn't really understand what digital music was. I just knew there was an iPod and there's a store. I knew about Napster. That was about it. That was just kind of early digital days. And man, I got the job and I shifted. And I remember the day that I accepted the offer, I feel like God just kind of revealed at that moment. I told you that you'd work in music, and that was really my journey into where the beginning of where I am now in the Christian music space.
That's something that I was realizing when I was reading your bio, when you went to Integrity. It was like perfect timing because the iPod came out, and of course they were developing like the whole thing with like iTunes Music, downloading an iTunes LP. At the time, was that something that that Christian music was really want to get into, or was it kind of like, were you one like the first ones to get like their feet wet with it?
Man, I feel like, I think everybody was the industry in general just kind of reacted out of like, okay, now there's, it went from everybody stealing music. MP3s are a liability. Kazaa, Naps, like all everything was illegal. So when I felt like iTunes and Apple, Steve Jobs had vision for music to not protect it, and I don't even think his original vision was to become this big music store. I think he wanted to sell a product. Like they sell technology, right? They sell iPhones now and iPads, and so I think the initial back then it was they had the iMac, and I think Steve Jobs was like, okay, we're gonna continue the iLine, and this will be iTunes for music. And what he did was he actually gathered. So what happens like in this space is you have the major labels. You have at that time you had EMI, U Universal, which now owns EMI, Sony, and Warner were the big three. So Steve did a really amazing job of gathering the three majors and saying, hey, we can provide a platform that can protect the music, you can sell the music, and you can get paid like monthly, which is a big shift. Now the margins were quite a bit different, but the cost to put it out was exponentially different too. So When I came into it, everybody was like, okay, iTunes is legit. There was no streaming. It was like, this is going to be the thing. And the price point is this. So literally when I started, the market share was like this. About 10 to 20% of total sales would be digital, and 80 to 90% would be physical. So it was still like retail heavy. CDs were being sold on the road, a lot of merchandise sales. So that was kind of when I entered. So at Integrity Music, and I think like many others, they were starting to look at catalog and going, okay, we've got a lot of catalog that needs to be on the store. And then also new releases. What do we do to promote and push it? Do we don't want to promote it too much because we want to sell CDs? So there was a little bit of kind of caution. And then also like, we know this is going to be the future, so let's also pour into it. So when I started at Integrity, I literally was in the resource center. They put me in a room full of cubicles that people were calling churches and saying, you know, do you want to buy choral product? Do you want to buy chord charts? You know, song books, all the resources for the church. So I was in that, and I was a little dude in the corner, like digitizing stuff and selling things on iTunes through Sony Music, which Integrity distributed through, and Don Millen was a president.
I was going to ask you, like, were you there when Don was the president? Yeah,
I
so.
was there, and here's the funny thing about Don. Like when I was struggling with like, okay, Lord, you know, I got to be able to listen to good music. In my mind, also was Don Moen, because I knew Don Moen from very contemporary music days. My aunt did all the mailings for the Hosanna, so I knew about Don Moen, and you know, it was kind of very contemporary music that I typically wouldn't listen to. And in my head, I was like, I can't, like, if I have to listen to that, like, I don't know if I can be a Christian. And a year into Integrity, Don invited me into his office, which he is the absolute sweetest human being on the earth. Like, he's an amazing guy. So kind. It's so kind that he came in. I came into his office, and he's like, hey, Chris, really love what you're doing with digital iTunes. And we really feel like it needs to be part of the label. And we'd like you to work closer with the artist. So if you want to, we want to offer you to move into the label. And you have a marketing background, so you can help us figure out digital marketing. He's like, but it's your choice. Like, we don't want to force it. So I was like, God, you're so great. Like, not only did I get to know this guy, but I literally wrestled with the fact that could I be a Christian if I had to listen to his music? And I actually worked on some of his projects while I was there, and I got to appreciate even his legacy, man. It's like, gosh, you know, God is good all the time. Like all when I first started going to church, like they were singing his songs at the church along with like Hillsong and other ones. So it was really interesting. So I'm a year into it, I moved into the label, and then for me, I think the big break per se, or I think that God's timing in it, was when I moved into the label. There was a guy who ran all the marketing for Hillsong, and he moved to Nashville and he left. And at the time, they had a Hillsong worship album coming out, and Hillsong United was on United We Stand. So Don was like, hey, you're young, you've got tattoos, and there's this Youth United thing, and Mark's left. Would you come on board and take this United project on and also help kind of an interim do Hillsong? I was like, yeah, I can do the marketing for that. So I went to Baton Rouge, and they were on that tour. I knew nothing really about United other than a song or two. And they, at Jonathan Stockstill's Bethany World Outreach Church, which is a pretty big church in Baton Rouge, they sold out. They didn't really actually have tickets. It was just like, this was back when they didn't do any concert tickets. And so I walked into a sold out room packed, the overflow room packed, and about 1,000 people in the parking lot that couldn't get in. And I was like, what is going on? What is it? And then that year, Don and I and Jay King is a dear friend that did A&R. We all flew down. He was the younger guy that came in, I think at two my second or third year, he came on board. We all flew down to Australia, and we jumped in with Joel Houston and the team, and Brooke was actually just moving to Sydney at that time. So I got to meet her, and they were recording All the Above. And so we got to go to the studio and be a part of that. But to me, it's like I'm saying all that because I feel like God's timing and me being there and the opportunity that came up was I couldn't have written it myself, and that really opened up a lot. What would be the next 7 years for me at Integrity was working all the Hillsong stuff, and Jay and I worked a bunch of projects like the John Mark McMillan, Daniel Bastia, All Sons and Daughters that were new then. So I think it was like there was a new wave of I feel like the next generation of Christian music sound.
What other new trends you foresee happening in the Christian music in the next upcoming years?
Yeah, I think there's going to be in the artistry, and you see this in the music industry in general. There's more of a I think more and more things are being democratized. So you're seeing where there were gatekeepers, there were walled gardens, there were entry points that you had to go through to reach people, to reach audience. All that's kind of been put onto a level playing field, which is really, really great. So I think what you're going to see is artists that are going to do things independently and in partnership. So when things like that start to, the old systems and the ways and the structure starts to democratize, then I think what you see emerge from that is new technologies. Of course, that's prevalent in the last year to 2 years with blockchain and what you're seeing with NFTs and ways to get music out. And also you have I think partnerships. Like you'll see more and more, what I feel like will be more business type partnerships where it's it's for an artist, it's not going to be traditional type label deals or traditional type publishing deals. You'll see more creative ways to approach that where they'll both be partnering where they can serve common interests and move towards something that's great. 'Cause I mean, now you have platforms and ways to crowdfund, to self-fund, to create and own your own masters. And you also have partnerships where you can, you'll see labels that will move in and will create deals where they're co-partnering on ownership, on creative aspects of it. But I think there's more of a, I mean, years ago, it was if you wanted to make it to break to but however, there's a lot of different cliche ways to say it, but if you wanted to expand and reach a broader audience, have more music consumption, a lot of times you needed a platform like a label or a movement that has a platform that is, driven by YouTube consumption. But I think what you're seeing now is artists can have a direct connection through social media, social networks with their audience, and they can talk to them on a frequency that's, super engaging. And it can be kind of a push marketing where you have, I'm trying to say, like, it can be very social and engaging in one aspect. It can also be very marketing driven, where before you would pay a lot of money to have eyeballs to see things as an artist that you want to advertise and talk about the new song, the new EP. I feel like now artists have that ability with their own social networks, their own direct database connections with their audience, and there's not as much of a need to throw large digital advertising budgets towards something. So I think you'll see more and more of that direct connection, and I think you'll see more frequency of music. I feel like there's more creative content happening. Like there's more, we're at a day and age where music consumption and content consumption is at an all-time high. Even I feel like we're kind of post-pandemic. Pandemic, yeah, super large spikes, but I think even now post-pandemic, there's artists that are putting out music that have millions of people that listen to it in the first week. And when I started in this space at the very beginning of the digital wave, if you had 200,000 to 500,000 people in a week, that was massive. Like you're the biggest artist in the Christian genre. And now it's pretty commonplace for 200 to 500,000 for artists that have, even I would say kind of a medium range footprint. Your larger ones are having, tens of millions of people engage concert in a particular week. So I feel like you're going to see more of that happening, more content consumption, more content creation. And to me, the next big two next big waves in the digital space is the Internet of Things. So the connectivity and home devices and the things that will have ability to, if I'm listening to something on my phone and I go into my, to my house and it transfers there into my car, like it's going to be the seamless Internet of Things will aggregate your music consumption experience. So that'll increase the consumption levels. Smart devices, home devices, all that being connected in more realistic ways that will continue to do that. And then on the artist side of creative content, I feel like the non-fungible tokens, NFTs, are going to be the next really big direct to consumer connection. That's a lot like the street teams or fan clubs. We have this really direct connection to fans that want to support and engage and be a part of your journey with stuff. So that's, I think you're going to see more and more of that play out this year as cryptocurrencies are more widely adopted. And you have platforms that also have paywalls that are not crypto. They're crypto agnostic. So you can use like credit cards or debit cards, or whatever to access content.
Chris, you are always thinking ahead. That's what I've noticed. Like the theme of this podcast, when you started, back 12, 13 years ago with iTunes. Now you're looking at NFTs, and where I could definitely see an artist say, hey, if you want to like a exclusive, the first to listen to that song, buy this NFT, or mm-hmm. have that song NFT, like the original track or something like that, then could be the way of the future. But I like, wow, which I imagine a lot of the big guys like Hillsong or Bethel asking you about this stuff, I bet. Hey, Chris, should we do this?
Yeah, I don't think it's a matter of if, it's when. It's like, when do you do it? And I think now is the time to, I mean, this last year you saw Burger King did 6 million NFTs on their Keeping It Real, Make It Real meal boxes. That was brilliant. It was a QR code. You click it, you get into an NFT. So I think you're going to see more wide spread with brands. And like iHeartRadio did 1 million free NFTs to their listeners to get them into the NFT community. And then you can start to drip out content and access to different things. And I see more recently, there's a lot of artists that are doing, as part of token NFT token series of a campaign, if you collect them, you have different levels of access, and you'll have like giveaways to lifetime VIP tickets to concerts. And there's like this tangible offshoot and connectivity with an NFT that from the digital side and the digital consumption side is awesome. But when you start tying in merch and real world integrations to that, it's pretty brilliant. Gary Vee just launched the first NFT restaurant that is unbelievable. It's not even open, and he's already sold 2,000 memberships to it.
He's a genius. He thinks like four years ahead.
It's brilliant. So now, I think that's the thing. It's like that access point where people want to, as a fan, like, man, I want to feel like I'm in the inner circle. Like if you're connected on socials, you'd be like, oh, it's great. Like I can watch when things come out, but when you're connected in that way with what I feel like the NFT community creates, then you're inside of a premium experience that can be curated any way the artist wants to do it.
Chris, you nailed it. Premium experience. That's pretty much what it is. You're in the industry. Do you foresee that we're going to hear Brandon Lake doing this soon? Dante, what have you heard inside the industry?
Man, I think it's going to be exciting. So I'm working on a couple of things that I'm not ready to completely talk about yet, but this will be the year. So I think you'll see, just had a really great conversation with a platform that I'm starting to partner with, and they're seeing more. So, the Christian genre is a niche genre. Very. It's not like mainstream pop, and And what he told me was like they're seeing more engagement, conversion, and traction with the niche genres than they are with the big mainstream. So I think you'll see more and more of that, whether it's Christian genre, jazz, you know, just go down the list of all the other genres. And then there's some really fun stuff that's going to be rolling out with the Super Bowl and the Grammys that are now moving to April 3rd because of the stupid Omicron spikes in LA and all that stuff.
I agree.
So so there's some
Might as
really
well
cool
move to
stuff that
Florida.
the Grammys doing. Yeah, exactly. Miami.
Right?
It's Miami. So I think you'll see this year more of these bigger brand pushes for NFT community that are music focused. So the Grammys have some really cool stuff that are going to roll out in the next few months. So man, my hopes are in our genre, we'll see it happen in the next 2 to 3 months.
Amen. Chris, what is the best way to reach you online and to follow your work and also future works, because it feels like there's a lot up in like the pipeline, so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Instagram is always pretty easy to get me if you want to just kind of see what's going on in the real day to day. I try to be good at Twitter, but I'm really not that good at Twitter. It's
I was going to
a
ask
lot
you,
of
but most Christian artists are not on Twitter usually.
I know, and that's like, and I don't. It's I don't know why. It's almost because it's too rapid fire, I guess. I do follow stuff on Twitter, and I'll go to it. It's not my go-to necessary first, but I have a Twitter handle. But it's typically most of my handles are Estes C, my first initial on Instagram. I have a website, a kind of a blog on Medium. That's 119collective.com, or you can go to chrisestes.me. They both go to the same place. So that's where. This year I was inspired by Seth Godin to really get back at writing. I love to write and love to journal. So I'll start putting more and more posts about, you know, technology, media, ministry, music that I'm really excited about, interested in. And then my emails, you can always email me at chris@119collective or chris@chrisestes.me.
Well, anyways, we're out of time. Chris Estes, I had a great time with you talking
Thanks,
about,
man.
old school Christian music from CDs, cassettes to the metaverse and NFTs, and looking forward because you're definitely going to help transform the Christian music industry and, make it stand like in par and maybe stand ahead than most of the other niches and other industries. But I really appreciate you.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. And man, appreciate all you're doing for the podcast world.
No problem. Have a good one, and thanks for coming on to the Sleon Productions podcast.
Thanks, man.